this type of a gentleman here in the state of Utah, $400,000 a year income earner, has an incredible story about just getting out of the gate and killing it from day number one. These are the people that you clap when you hear their story when they walk across stage, but you're muttering under your breath a whole lot of other words. Like, how in the heck did that guy do that and stuff like that? And so this is your chance to get some therapy so you can get over it, so you don't hate him so much for having so much success and living a life that seems like there's no challenges, never had a problem in prepaid legal and everything else like that. This is your chance to ask any questions you want. Again, you guys, someone who's made millions of dollars in prepaid legal right here in your midst. You know, this isn't a thing where, you know, you're at a convention with 20,000 other people and you're just a number in the crowd. You get to ask anything you want. Now, a caveat, if your question can be answered by marketing services, save it for Monday morning. Call marketing services. If you had a question about your paycheck or something like that, don't ask Mr. Riches. This is for you to mine the extra nuggets. And I'll tell you, and I know the execs feel the exact same way, when I have someone like this in town, and we say, look, you're going to get personal time with him. Tomorrow, everyone in the state gets stage time with him. They get to sit, watch him on stage. Tonight, you get personal time. When I say to my team, hey, you get personal time with this individual, I'm looking at my team going, okay, who understood that? Who understood how valuable it was to get personal time with him? Because when I'm looking at who I want to work with for the next month, the next 60 days, the next 90 days, I want the people that want to be the best students, the people that want to learn the most, the people that are showing up to everything, doing everything they can to grow their business. And so you guys made the right decision. You're here tonight. Let's give it all up for Mr. Riches.
All right. All right. It's great to be here. Thanks for the barbecue, Dave. That was really nice. All right. Any questions you want to ask? All right. Let's go home. We'll see you tomorrow. We had a good briefing Thursday night. How many did we have? 108, something like that. So packed. Not as big as we could have had, but it was good. And we'll be there tomorrow morning. We got a briefing at, is it at 10? 9:30. Is it?
The doors will be open at 9:30 if you want a good seat. You will already be in line at 9:30.
Great. All right, any questions you want to ask? So my background, I started out in group sales. I did that for about almost 5 years, and I focused pretty much entirely on that. Although during that time, I did recruit a team. And at the beginning of 1999, which was my four-year mark, I had decided to just recruit. So I had built up. I had a platinum organization. I was making close to $10,000 a month, maybe $8,000 to $10,000 a month, in overrides for my team. And I finally, after 4 years, had to hit a point that I could make a living off my team. You know, I could live off $100,000 a year. And so I started to transition from group sales to from group sales to recruiting, which was a hard transition for me. I'll talk more about that maybe tomorrow, but because recruiting to me was a lot harder. Here's the main reason: you gave control to someone else. I mean, you were relying on other people to go out and do something, and I knew I could go write sales, but I wasn't sure about what all. I was sure. Most of them didn't do anything. So that was the fear of it. It was like, oh my gosh, you know, do I turn this over to a team when I have so much personal control over my income by selling? But I had learned, obviously, about leveraging my income and leveraging my time and passive income. And to get to the goals I wanted to get to and to help the people I wanted to help, I had to build a team. So it took a while. But I finally, after 4 years, had hit the platinum level. I had been platinum for a couple years solid, but my income had got up to about $100,000 a year in overrides. That was the beginning of 1999, and all my goals for 99 were to just focus on selling, just focus on recruiting. It was all about just massive recruiting. I was going to travel the country, build a massive team. And I had something happen that kind of threw me off that in the state of Louisiana group I had been working with to get as a payroll group, contacted me at the end of the, just before 1999, and told me that I had been approved to sell to 68,000 state employees through payroll deduction. So I kind of threw away my recruiting plan and went into a very aggressive production mode that year. I wrote 1,700 memberships. Not counters, memberships, and it was fun. I made $488,000 that year. By the end of the year, my team override income was over $20,000. So I was talking about that briefly. It was a fun year because, like, one of those months, June of 1999, I sold 502 memberships, made $62,000, and I had a lot of group producers on my team. So, hey, Mark, I wrote, 100 sales. I'm like, who cares? That's nothing. I wrote 500 sales. So we definitely raised the bar for at least production-wise. And a lot of my team stepped up to the plate. It was a lot of energy and, made a lot of money. And then we moved, at the end of that year, we moved to Tennessee. And that was 11, almost 12 years ago, and I haven't opened any groups since I moved to Tennessee. So a lot of people ask me group questions. I've got a lot of group people on my team, but I haven't personally opened a group since I've lived in New Orleans. I've trained some people how to do that, but I've 100% focused on building a team over the last 11 and a half, 12 years, and I love it. I got a great team. My biggest focus is raising a family and enjoying life, and I've done well at that too. That's why I hope you're here tonight in this business, is that you want a great lifestyle. And if you're working the business and not having a great lifestyle, I'd just say you're off track. It's not a destination. It's part of the process and part of the journey. You go and work hard during the day, and you might have to work a little harder than you're working so that you can have time freedom and enjoy things. It's not something I work to get to. It's something I've done every year I've been in prepaid legal. I've always taken a big vacation. I remember my second year in the business, we took a six-week trip. Just awesome. I mean, if you came to my house, we have just books of pictures and photo albums of trips and places and things we do. And that's why I do the business. I love the freedom that it provides. It's nice to be able to do those things with income. We took a trip once. It was almost a five-week trip. We flew everyone out here to Salt Lake, rented a 15-seater van, drove to California, and traveled the coast. California was just and we spent about a little over $14,000 in those not quite 5 weeks on hotels and travel and airfare and everything. But while we were gone, I made $23,000 in income. And that's the best way to take a vacation, when you can take a vacation and make a ton of money while you're gone. But I think that's always been a priority, to spend time, enjoy life, and enjoy my 10 kids. And so make sure you put that as a priority, as kind of the top. And then, that you're 10 kids, yeah, absolutely, at least. That's a key motivator. Some of you are not motivated enough to go sell something, so you need to go get your 10 kids. You'll be a lot more motivated. Because you come home today with one membership and your spouse says, hey, good job. That doesn't cut it with 10 kids. It's like you got to bring home a UPS envelope full. But so I spent 5 years selling, 7,000 personal sales. Last 10 years I've spent team building. My team's over 300,000 memberships. That's kind of my history. So based on that, you can maybe I can answer a question. I've got got some great producers in my team. I've got Dave Paperno down in Southern California. He's just wrote his 17,000th membership. And he's got almost 10,000 active memberships on the books. He was the number one producer for the company last year. And I've got Kim Ferris. She was in the top five last year. She's in Buffalo, New York. I've got a team all over the country. I'm very national. I've got EDs in 16 states. And then in recruiting, I've got the number one recruiter right now on my team. I've learned a lot from this guy. He's in Minnesota, Chuck Fields. He's the number one recruiter for 2011. Just ripping it up. I mean, he did 19 recruits last month. So What did I learn from Chuck? But I'm not a very good recruiter. It's one way I learn. You know, he's a aggressive recruiter. That's what his background is. He talks a lot about posturing. He says that if the worst thing you can do is make someone that you're prospecting feel like you need them in your team. So some of the language I might use, especially in a tough recession like this, is I might say, Dave, you know, you seem like a really sharp guy, and I think you could do really good on our team. Well, that's not really good posturing, because in those words I'm saying, we really need you on our team. He would switch that around and say something like, Dave, you know, there's a lot of people that want to join our company and want to be a part of this business. Tell me what you're bringing to the table, what assets you bring, and why I should spend my time with you instead of someone else. So it's just a kind of a paradigm shift on the way to approach people, and he has a whole, you know, smorgasbord of those types of language and words. He says the minute you tell someone, you know, that you need them or they feel that you need them, you've shackled yourself in the business, and it's going to be an uphill, he says, like pushing a wheelbarrow uphill full of rocks with a flat tire. I mean, it's just, you've really slowed your momentum. And we tend to do that because we go out there and we get some rejection, we get someone that turns us down, stuff. So we're, after a few hours, we're in kind of a begging mode. It's like, hey dude, you look really good, you know. And you might even lie, they might not look really good. You might just be saying, hey, you're real sharp and we'd love to have you on the team. That's my language. We'd love to have you on the team, you know, be part of the family or whatever. But none of that language, I don't think, benefits because it doesn't. So he flips it to them. What do you bring to the table? And then, you know, they might answer with something, and he'll say, you know, give me two things, two of your biggest skills. What are your two biggest skills that you're bringing in that would separate you from the crowds of people that want to be part of this opportunity? So see how that paradigm shift, he's no longer begging them, but they're really selling hard to get part of the business. Another key thing he says, kind of setting up the close process, he says, Dave, we're looking for people that can make decisions quickly. You know, like Think and Grow Rich talks about, you know, people that, you know, successful people tend to make decisions quickly. Would you consider yourself someone that can make a decision fairly quickly? Well, what have you done? Well, you've set it up for, you know, a few minutes or whatever, a few days, saying, you know, are you ready to make a decision? You get in. And you could flip that around an hour later or 15 minutes later and say, now, Dave, you told me that you were one that could make a quick decision. Here's the deal. It costs $149 to get started. Are you good enough to go sell two memberships to get that investment back? And, you know, we're ready to get started. So that's some of the language. Of course, that's his language. I'm kind of robbing that. Lately, I've been saying, you know, would love to have you on the team. But I'll help in any way to get you started. So I'm being honest. I mean, but I've learned a lot. I've learned, and, you know, he recruited 19 last month. I recruited 3. So, but I've, one other thing I'll just share. I've always consistently recruited. When I started building my team and decided, okay, I'm going to start building, I've never had a month I didn't recruit 3 or 4 people, ever. Not ever. I've been a platinum executive director for 190 consecutive months. I've never not been an executive director. I qualified for ED my first month with 75 personal sales, and I've never not been an executive director. I was talking about this on our drive here tonight, why I just went out and hit 75 sales. Probably the biggest reason is I didn't know that you weren't supposed to do that. We didn't have any standard or any communication systems in place that would say that. I assumed everyone was selling 75 a month. Here's why. Because the marketing plan you make, you know, back then was a $14.95 sale, group sale, and the bottom was like $30 and the top was $112. So, I mean, I wasn't really that bright in math, but I knew that 112 was a lot more than 30. So I was like, how do you get the top? You sell 75 in a month. So it was about that simple. I said, well, I'm going to go do 75. I mean, I'm not going to settle for 30 or 50 or 80 when I can do 112. Plus, I didn't really like my sponsor that much. So I think one of the big motivators was once they said, he gets the difference, I was like, well, I don't like him. So whatever motivates you to go grab it. But the reason I didn't really appreciate my sponsor is he never did a whole lot for me, just introduced me to the business. He never really did much other than that. And he gave me an audio tape once, and he said, this is an audio tape. You know, it talks about something. He said, they're a dollar. And I said, oh, great. And I think I was a producing person at this point. I don't know. Might have been in the prospecting mode. But then he made me pay him a dollar. I had to pull out my wallet and give him a buck. That always kind of turned me off. I was like, well, that's cheap. But so anyway, that wasn't the only reason I didn't. But despite that, I guess the message is, despite having a sponsor that really never did anything, I've never received any kind of recognition, that he's never called me, never said good job, never sent me anything. And despite that, I've made $6.8 million. And so let's make sure that that's not one of our excuses, that we have a poor sponsor or mentor in the business. The first mentorship I got in the business, the first time anyone told me anything about how to do the business, I was a platinum. And Dave Wheeler, who was my upline, sent me an audio tape, a cassette tape. Now, he had communication with me as far as he would travel to France and stuff, and he'd send me postcards saying, you know, having a great month here in Paris, keep selling, Dave Wheeler. And then he'd send me one from Costa Rica, bought a home in Costa Rica. So it was getting... I guess that was recognition. He wasn't really recognizing me. I was kind of recognizing him, but he was on vacation. But it'd be like Dave going away for a month and sending you a postcard. But at least he was thinking of me. But he wasn't training me. He never told me anything. He never said how to do anything. He never said anything like that. I was kind of running with it. But I was a platinum ED, and he sent me this audio tape, and he said, now that you're platinum, you know, he had recruited Dave Sevilla, so he had that organization. He said, I believe your organization could become like that. That's why I'm going to spend some time with you. And he said this in the audio. He said, I'm going to spend some time mentoring you and training you and helping you. But I was thinking when I was listening to that, where have you been? You know, I needed all this stuff you're saying while I wrote my first four EDs. So I just share that because I hear people make kind of excuses. Well, I didn't get very good. I hear it a lot. I didn't get very good support. But I went to platinum with zero support. My first briefing I ever attended was in, I had been an associate for 3 years, and I'd earned over $500,000. And then I went to a Dave Sevilla briefing in Jack. We didn't have briefings in Louisiana. I went to a Dave Sevilla briefing in Jackson, and it changed my life. It's probably what got me more fired up about recruiting and building a team than anything I've ever seen or heard since. I drove home, you know, it was about a 3-hour drive to get to Jackson, Mississippi, but I drove home calling every person I had on my team, telling them, you know, here's the deal, you know, it's 15 minutes, and you got it, you draw on the chart. I mean, I was so pumped. That's the first really educational thing I'd really attended. He did a kind of a half-hour training after the briefing, and that just lit me up. So I think we're spoiled today. We got so much great information. Anyway, okay. Any other questions? I won't answer them that long. I just warming up. Challenges like that I faced. Well, I don't think they're any different from the challenges we face, every one of us. I think your attitude of getting through challenges is critical. I knew that if I was going to change my income and change my lifestyle, that it would be an uphill process. I knew it wasn't going to be easier. There was one point I hit in my business, and I don't know if I was recruiting or just selling it, but I remember this point where I said, you know, it would be easier to just go get a job, probably in recruiting, because I did pretty good in selling, but I remember when I started recruiting, it was just tough. I mean, there's like I had 20 people on my team, you know, which I thought was a big team. I mean, they say go build a big team. I had 20 guys. I said, that's a pretty big team. Well, it's not a big team. So no one ever told me that either. So, but I thought, man, I already got, you know, I was like celebrating at home. We got 20, and the whole team, you know, we were excited. And then at the end of the month, you know, the counters would be 97. So my whole team had sold 97. I had sold 94 of them. And I'm thinking, you have got to be kidding. There is no possible way 20 people can just sell three plans. I knew at that point, I knew the company was stealing my overrides. I mean, I was like, there is no... Because look at me, I sold 94. I'm thinking, my whole time, I had some sharp people on my team. And they were selling three, and I was just blown away. And I remember that month, I called every person. I went down and called them, printed out the report, and said, you know, how many sales did you write? And I only came up with two. So the company had overpaid me by one, I guess. Well, I'm thinking, well, that was just, when I went through that process, I had no desire to recruit ever again, because it's like, and it was a lot of work. I mean, to get those three sales, I was like, I feel like an EMT. I was like performing CPR all the time. Stay in the business. Do it. Stay on it, man. You're good. You're good. You can do this. And then you just turn away from that and go over here, do the same thing, and he goes back into cardiac arrest. He goes, oh, I can't do this. It's too hard. I'm quitting. And you're running back and forth. So at the end of the month, you're sweating. Harder work than selling memberships, for sure. And it's so unsure of what you're going to get. And at the end of the month, they do three. You make $90 in overrides. It's like, that is waste of time. And I've heard a lot of big group producers say that. You know, I tried recruiting. It just didn't work. Well, I did, too. I tried it, and it didn't work right at first. But I knew. I read enough. I was a good reader. And I studied successful people. And I knew that it was just a matter of time to find a leader, to develop a team that produce some leadership. And it wasn't too long after that I got my first leader, producer. I'll say he wasn't really a leader, he was more of a sales producer in Sacramento, California. He started selling 75 sales a month. So I started making about $1,500, $2,000 a month. His name's Rick Green. He's now sold about 13,000 memberships. In February this year, he sold 400 plans in 1 month, so had a really good month. But his residuals are about $150,000 a year, so he slows down. They slow down when those residuals kick in like that. But anyway, the point is, when he started producing, so I don't know, maybe I'd recruited 50 people up to get that guy, and he started selling memberships, and I was making, $2,000 a month. I thought, the lights, like the whole tunnel lit up. Because I said, I sat at night with my calculator, I said, if I could just get 10 Rick Greens, you know, that would pay me $20,000 a month. And really, probably then, I was thinking 10 Rick Greens, or 5 Rick Greens, you know, $10,000 a month. But I know at some point I said, I want to make $20,000 a month for my team. And so the power of that is, once I had one leader or one producer, it made the mathematics very simple, because I knew I'd have to recruit 60 more people to get another leader. But getting the first leader was very hard. I quit dozens of times in frustration, but I didn't quit more than a couple of days. I got back on it. I stuck with it. Conventions, you know, kept me focused. My wife, you know, was motivated to build a team. I'll tell you this story real quick. So we go to the first convention. I go to the first convention myself. I'm a brand new associate, haven't really done anything. And then the second convention I came to, I was the number fourth producer for the entire company. The second year, in 9 months, had made $119,000. So my 1099 was $119,000 for that first year. And they sent me a red ribbon for my name badge, which said top producer. And there was only 10 of them. And there was probably a couple thousand people at the convention, maybe 3,000 or 4,000. And I was making money, so I was able to bring my wife with me to the convention. And she was real proud. You know, I'm like, look at what top producer. You know, we're rich. And in the foyer of the convention place, we were, you know, people would come up, say, oh, you know, how long have you been? I said, just a year. I'd pull out of my suit jacket the 1099. I had it with me, and I'd say, here's my, made $119,000 first year. Oh, my gosh, and out there with the associates and junior associates and seniors, it was really big money. The problem is, we went into the convention, and all of a sudden, you know, they got Dave Cebula up there, and he, that year, had earned $1 million. And so he's telling his story about how he made $1 million, and then they had a bunch of others coming up that had made $500,000, $250,000, and somewhere along there, my wife turned to me and she said, "Mark, don't show anyone else your 1099. Because that is embarrassing." And then on the way home, she's like, "You don't even have a team." You know, and I'm like, "Well, you don't remember the red ribbon? You know, I'm like a top guy." She goes, that really means nothing, Mark. So there's kind of some paradigm shifts like that, but that's the power of being at an event like that, is it does kind of give you a bigger picture of what your potential is. Because if I'd have missed that event, I'd have thought I was a big producer, you know. I was number four in the whole company. But I left the event, even though I was a top producer, I had no team. I had no organization, and so I was very motivated out there to build a team. So anyway, I'm kind of rambling, so. Did I answer that question? Who knows? Yes. What's your name? Kay?
Yeah.
All right.
I guess when you want to become a better leader, that you have to go through some basic, I guess, the process. Now, do you have specific things that you do to develop leaders, not just where you live, but nationwide? What are some of the things that you do?
That's a great question. And I think it's a combination of a lot of things. So, yes, you get them involved in personal development, because that's like an organization on steroids. I mean, you could build an organization without that and without that constant drive of personal development, but it would be a harder organization to develop leadership from. So that's definitely a good point. Do I work with them? Yeah, you filtering, you communicate. There's five things I do when I identify someone in my organization that could potentially be a leader. There's five things that I do with them. One is I communicate regularly. So that's what I'm paid for. They've paid me a lot of money to communicate with leaders. I call them. I communicate with them. Number two, I become their friend. So kind of like a barbecue. You know, bring them over. You spend time with them. I take them out on my boat. Not all my leaders. You know, like Dave Paperno is definitely a big leader and a producer on my team. He's never been to my house, never been on my boat. I've never ate any meals with him. And I've never seen him write a membership. But I assume he knows how to do it. He's written 17,000 of them. But so there are exceptions. Not all leaders are going to need that, but I do become their friend. Number three, I sell their spouse, so I try and get the spouse involved. Because the spouse, I've learned, can be either a support, kind of some win for them, or an anchor and pull them out of the business. I've lost some good associates from spouses that aren't supportive. So I try to involve the spouse when I call. Like if I'm calling Dave's house and Wendy answers, is it Wendy? She answers the phone. Instead of Wendy says hello, I say, "Hey, is Dave there?" Instead of that, I would say, "Hey, Wendy, how are you doing? This is Mark Riches." And I would talk a little bit and spend a little time. "How's the kids doing? How's the garden?" You know, something that I could relate. And say, "Hey, by the way, is Dave there?" Something like that, so that they feel included. In recognition, I'm a big at recognition. I'll include the spouse's name on that and stuff like that. You know, if the spouse has an email, I'll get that email address and add that to my emailer too. So kind of including that spouse in the loop of communication. The fourth thing I do is recognition. The best money I've spent, probably the two best investments are tools. You know, exposure tools for me and my team, and second would be recognition. So plaques, things that books, I've given out thousands and thousands of books, audios, cassettes. One DVD that changed my, a CD, is that Jim Rohn. You know, I saw him at the meeting, at the briefing Thursday. What is it, Success in Network Marketing or whatever. But man, that when I heard that, it just was so much information that I needed to know to build a team. So I give that to every new associate I recruit. I pump those down, little tools like that. So that's, but recognition is a big one, and I pour it on when it comes to recognition. You know, I understand the value of that. I wanted recognized when I started. And when I I was sending out these plaques, like a manager, I have a little manager plaque, and then I have a director plaque, and then an ED plaque's big, the bigger one. And I was breaking managers and directors and EDs, so I'd send those out. And then I realized one time I haven't got any of those plaques myself. So I ordered, I called my secretary in, and I had her, you know, fill out the form for getting the, you know, because I was a manager and director and ED. And so she got all those flags. And I remember when that box came. I mean, I dropped everything. I was opening it up and hanging them up on my wall. It was awesome. And then over time, I started developing, you know, bronze executives, directors, gold, silvers, platinums, and $250,000 earners. So I'd kind of upped the plaque thing, and so then when once I had sent a bunch of those out to my team, I called her in again one day, and I said, hey, can you order me a bronze and silver? I'd figured the dates out, because I wanted the dates to be right on the wall, but, you know, my bronze, silver, gold, platinum plaque, my platinum 4 plaque, my platinum 5 plaque, so... I mean, you come to my office, it is full of recognition, but the truth is I bought almost every one of them myself. The company gave us, the millionaires get a plaque, and it was kind of cheesy because it's like, it's a little bigger than a postcard, but it's not really big, and it's for their millionaires. But I got that, and then I lost. I was like, did someone take my platinum? I found it in my suit pocket. I was like, here it is. No, it's just kind of a joke. I was like, you only got, at that time, I think I had 30 of them or 40 of them. They only have 100 now. It's like, but anyway, I found a place on my wall where a big plaque could go. It's about 3 foot by 2 foot. And I measured the wall, called my plaque guy. He, it was $120, you know, for this beautiful plaque. They had my name. This one didn't even have my name on it. Someone could steal my millionaire plaque, you know. So it's got my name on it, millionaire. It looks the same. It's a little bigger. And got a picture next to that, you know. But anyway, recognition. And then the fifth thing is showing the big picture. And you do that by getting them into the big events. You know, you show them the big picture of the massive events. Those are the five things I've pretty consistently done to develop leaders. It's a numbers game. I mean, the more you recruit, the more whoever exposes the most recruits the most. Whoever recruits the most has the most leaders. Most people I talk to that are frustrated that they don't have a leader, they shouldn't be frustrated because they don't have enough associates in their team to have a leader. So, you know, if you have 20 people on your team and you don't have a leader, you are right on track. You know, so there's no need to ever be frustrated at that stage. I was, but no one ever, I never came to the barbecue and learned that 20, it takes more than 20. It takes hundreds of people to get a leader. When I print out my production report, you know, it's 500 pages. It's 509 or 10 pages of associates, you know, 30,000 some associates. And my producers on a month, I don't print it out, but the top 11 pages have producers on it. And all the other 500 pages. So if you think of a ream of paper, and 10 of those pages have someone, and the last two or three pages, they sell one plan. So they're not really big producers, but only the top 10 pages have producers. All the other 500 pages have zero production. So if you want to make $40,000 a month, like I make for my team, then you got to get 500 pages of people that do nothing, and you're right on track. So a person says, man, I got 2 pages of people that do nothing. You got a lot more if you want to make the big money. You got to go get a ream of those people. And I don't know why, like Jim Rohn says, I don't know why people don't do it, but I know the numbers. The numbers are the numbers, and you just work the numbers. So, but it is a breath of fresh air when you get a producer with you, a leader. To me, it super motivates me to go find another one. And so you got to stay in the game till you get that first leader. And the big money kicks in once you get 3 or 4. So that's the other thing is with the new platinum bonuses, you go get 4 EDs on your team. The first year you get $55,000 in bonuses. There's a huge incentive right now, I think, to get to that top level and stay there. All right. Yes, ma'am. Well, my two biggest organizations are my war market. My mom's organization does about 600-700 sales a month, and then my brother's organization does probably about the same. He was at 1,000 with double counters. He keeps reminding me, you know, I'm like, we're not doing double counters anymore. You're only at 500. it's like, It's like, yeah, but under double counters, I've been at 1,200. I'm like, we're not, that ended. You didn't get the email? It's like 6 months ago. I just kind of joking on that. But those are my 2 days. Those are warm market. And I have four executive director lines that are from warm market. People I went to church with or something. Four of my ring earner lines are warm market. And I continue to expose warm market and talk to people all the time. What's my favorite method of recruiting? Is that what you're asking? I use the internet a lot. So I definitely use online presentations 99% of the time. I'm not a big hander out of DVDs, although, you know, I think it's a great tool to still get out. But I don't do a lot of personal handing out DVDs. I did a lot of magazines. I haven't done a lot lately, but I love magazine. In fact, I just recruited a guy about a month ago off a magazine. He read the whole thing. It's in a little store, That was good. So, but I'll tell you, online videos is definitely the number one source. I've worked leads. I've worked originally. I haven't done this in several years, but I ran a lot of ads in newspapers. When the internet wasn't where it is, we just put it out, you know, in a newspaper ad, and 26 of my director lines were recruited off ads in paper. That's how I got like Rick Green and some of my other ring earners. But I don't think I'd recommend that today because the internet's so much cheaper and so much faster, and so I wouldn't do that today. But that's how I build a lot of my team. Here's the bottom line: advertise, let people know that you have a opportunity. It's early to bed, early to rise. Work real hard and advertise. So you got to really advertise. There are thousands of people right here in this area that would join our business. So they just don't know. Here's why I know there's thousands. They're joining other companies that have just nothing compared to what we have. Their marketing plan has nothing. Their product has nothing. The company's scary. It looks like it could go out of business any second. And they're signing up, paying two or three times the money to get in our business. That, to me, that is proof that they would join our business if they simply were aware. Why did 6 million people join LifeLock? It does no restoration of other areas. It does limited restoration on your credit. It's twice the cost of our product. Why would 6 million people? They were unaware of our product. That's the only reason. I mean, the number one reason a sale's not made is the presentation's not done. I mean, I think... So that's the key. Is the key to recruiting is just mass exposure. Whoever exposes the most recruits the most. Chuck Fields, he did 19 recruits last month. I promise he's exposing more. He's getting more no's than anyone else in the company. He's not blinking at them. He's not looking for a no. He doesn't care about no's. He's looking for yeses. This month he'll do more than that, he said. He said July was a good month. He said August will be a great month. I don't personally, but I know people in my organization that like Chuck Fields. I think he does a lot of. I don't know if they're leads or. I really don't. I know he does Craigslist. He does lots of different things, but I think it's advertise. You know, however you advertise. I mean, I think it doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you're doing a lot of it. I mean, you got to mass expose the market. Like when we had the magazine going a few years ago, that was the number one tool. And it was hot, and we were putting out millions of magazines in the market. Now, I think it kind of ran its course, and I don't know if the market, you know, it's not like you couldn't hand a magazine to someone today and they say, I don't read. You know, that was a few years ago I read, now I don't do that anymore. I don't think the market changed. I think they would be just as receptive. I think in our minds it's just not new, it's not fresh, but I truly believe if a guy got a stack of magazines, he could go out and be a top recruiter with it. The key is that you have to get out and expose people with it. PBR DVD, I have no doubt at all that a guy could go become a millionaire in our business with a PBR DVD. or a PBR video. You know, here's the thing. They've taken away every excuse to build because now we've got the PBR DVD online where you can send it as a link to someone for free. So here's the question. You can now, the tool that Brian Crothers and Darnell, I think that's their biggest tool that they've built their team with. Would you agree? I mean, I'd say 80% of their team was recruited off that tool. So obviously it works. That's the biggest team in the business. And you know, Brian's making $1 million a year, or more. So obviously it works. So now you have the ability to send that same tool out, exact same tool, to a more depressed market. I think the need for income is greater than ever. The question is, how many did, and it's free. You don't have to spend a dollar or two for the DVD or the postage or the physical labor. You just have to get it out. Here's the question. How many did we send out today? How many did you send out today? That's the break point of success. So those are tools that we know work. They work fabulous. Recorded calls, I do a lot with those as far as tools go. So, and I don't think it's hard to find a prospect. You can, they're on your left, they're on your right. I mean, there's people everywhere to prospect. Dave?
I love leadership and pre-bid legal that we've had, and I'm amazed that some simple people from Ada, Oklahoma built this company to where it is today. But with the merger with MidOcean and hanging out with Rip and Alan, I know that you have more insight time with where you're at in the company, without shaping the direction of the company, different things. If you could paint a little bit of a picture about what you see now as the opportunity with MidOcean that we never had with prepaid legal, and parlay that in with why they need, if anyone in this place has not made the decision to be in Dallas, why they need to be in Dallas, and what MidOcean brings to the table to make the deal so much better than we ever had.
Great. I have had a chance to spend some time with the new owners and the new leadership. You know, it's easy to be critical, and I'm not saying Dave's being critical, but it's easy to be critical of, you know, prepaid legal, the home office, the company, the leadership. Here's one line I always use, especially my team, if someone's kind of feeding me up some negativity on that. You might hear this in your organization. It's like at their last team event, prepaid legal's last team event, they had 10,000 people at it. Now, if you held a team event today with your, you know, incredible leadership, because usually the person telling me negative things I lost my train of thought. Usually the person telling me something negative is being negative against the company. The company's not doing something right or building, you know, being good or whatever. So I say, you're obviously a lot brighter than them. And if you held your team event today and charged $150, how many would show up? Because if I answer, that's probably like 50 at the most. That's after 17 years of building. And they have 10,000 show up. Or you could say, you know, how's your home office look? They just built a $32 million office, and they got 850 people working in it. You're brilliant, obviously, compared to Harlan and the team there. So how's your home office look? What's your office look like? You know, because I just like to compare that, because it does humble me when I start thinking that way, that they did build a pretty amazing thing, even though they might not have had the perfect leadership or perfect vision or whatever. I mean, you know, the product obviously could have been improved or whatever, but they did pretty amazing with what they had. So now we get a new owner, a new opportunity. I commend, you know, Harlan for being able to step out of the picture, you know, give up his baby. These guys are brilliant. I mean, they're five of the sharpest business people I've ever met in my life. It'll take them a while to figure our business out and how it works. They come out of a network background, some of them, and so they'll adjust and figure out how this fits into that. And they're sharing that. They're very open with their thoughts and ideas. they do things a little different than in the past. In the past, Harlan might get a great idea, you know, in the night sometimes, and he'll Monday morning it's rolled out to the field, and it might not work. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. You know, we're all like, hey, go. These guys would never do that. They are very analytical in their processes. They would plan things out 6 to 8 months ahead. I mean, it's a little different. The leaders, I think, are adjusting to that too. They do it all by charts and graphs. They do it. It's a business. They wrote a check for $650 million. So they're not dabbling with this. They're not, you know, they have a responsibility to grow our company to a multi-billion-dollar business, to their shareholders, to their investors that invested that money. That wasn't their personal money. So it'd be like me loaning Dave some money, a couple $1 million. I want to. You better go to work and do. So you don't have to worry about their motivation. They are very motivated. Their reputation's on the line. They are picking up the business in a tough time, and we're in the middle of the worst recession ever, and they are willing to make that huge investment. So they're going to do some rebranding. One of the things that Alan, and I'm sure you've probably heard some of this, but you know, the perceived value when you say prepaid legal to them, and they're coming from an Ivy League, you know, extensive educated background, and they say when we hear the word prepaid, we think prepaid calling cards or prepaid cell phones or something that's cheap. Well, I personally never thought of that because, well, really, I used prepaid phone cards and stuff because I was cheap. So, but they're thinking that's not what we have product-wise. We have a lot better product than a prepaid phone card product. We have the best legal access plan that exists. We pay our law firm network $100 million a year. You can't go find a bigger and better law firm network than what Prepaid Legal has. So they're saying we can't have that name because it's already associated with things that are cheap, and we're not cheap. So that's called branding. Now, no one's ever looked at our company like that. But they've hired companies and businesses to analyze and look through the data and test market. And so in Dallas, one of the things they're going to be announcing is a new name, a new brand that we can go out and it won't have a undervalue. They're constantly making changes on retention. Just this last week, we've seen some of the reports. In 17 years, I've never had access to some of the reports we have access to today that are really basic reports that we should have had access to, really. They will change things like that by the hundreds. The one immediate change they did is change the marketing plan and really kind of fix the marketing plan, fix some of the problems in it. And they went to the field and got all the surveys. I mean, they do it totally different. I mean, I've never been surveyed. I've made millions of dollars and no one's ever called me from Prepaid Legal and said, what do you think? And I've been asked that at least 10 times since they've taken over. So they are very good students of the leadership and fix the willing to fix things. And then once they fix it, they stick to it long term, which is a key of, you know, if you read Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill says that's one of the attributes of successful people is they can make a decision quickly and stick to it long term. And unsuccessful people tend to make slow decisions and then change it often. So I think MidOcean is a company that makes decisions fairly quickly with a lot of analysis and sticks to them long term. So we're used to constant change and, you know, I think we're kind of addicted to, what are you going to do in the marketing plan? You know, got to do something to change it, get some momentum. But so we're in a different stage there, but I'll tell you, I'm so excited. I explain it this way Thursday night, and I'll probably show this again tomorrow, but the way I look at it from where I stand, I mean, I could retire, and I don't have to be actively building my business right now, but I see it this way. 40 years in business, we've paid out hundreds of millions of dollars in commissions. Last year, $134 million. Last 10 years, $1.2 billion in commissions. So, and it's not $1.2 billion every 10-year period, but, you know, it's probably for sure billions of dollars, more than $2 billion paid out in commissions in the 40 years we've been in business, right, to build a customer base of 1.5 million. So we got an active membership base of just under 1.5 million now, 1.4 million, and they've paid out all this billions of dollars in this 40 years. Here's my hypothesis. I believe MidOcean will fix some of the problems, plug the tub, make sure water's not gushing out as fast as it's coming in, that their big focus on retention, big focus on value, perceived value. Why did a customer quit? They don't want any customers quitting. So that's different, because we just kind of assume they quit. They want every customer that comes in prepaid legal to have a perfect experience and tell all their friends about it. So they're changing things. They're working through that. I believe in the next, let's just be conservative, 3 to 4 years, they'll double our membership base. They'll add another 1.5 million. Let's say it takes them 4 years. So what's been done in 40 years, all the commission dollars that have been paid out in that 40 years will be compressed down and paid out in the next 4 years. That means every person sitting here tonight can become extremely wealthy just being positioned. But here's I shared this on my way here, and here's how I look at it, though. It's like, we're working in the woods, okay? We're chopping down trees, and some of us are using, you know, saws and hatchets and chainsaws or whatever. They're going to sharpen our saws. But if you're in the woods and you're sitting by your saw, you aren't going to make any money. I mean, you have to have that saw in your hand. They'll make it sharper. I mean, they'll probably make your chainsaw a little longer or whatever. But you're going to have to still work. It's not... No one's going to get rich just by chance in our business. So the marketing plan doesn't reward people for that. So you have to be working. You have to be going and doing. And like you're here. You're here and involved and participating and selling and recruiting and building. And if you're doing that, things will get a lot easier. You'll realize this is a lot faster and easier than we've ever seen it. And it'll take a few more months. I don't think all that will transpire in Dallas, but they'll roll some exciting stuff out in Dallas. They've already rolled some exciting stuff out. Importance of being in Dallas, just really, it's as important as any event. If I'd have missed my first event, I probably would not have been in the business. I don't know what I got from the first event, but it kept me in the business. The second event I went to was my paradigm shift from selling, being a great salesperson, to being a good recruiter, and, you know, going there and being insulted by my wife that we were nothing because we don't have a team, you know, motivated me to come back. And the next time I came back, I had probably 30 people on my team at that next event a year later, and continue to grow that. The point being is, don't ever miss any event. If you're serious about your future, you should never miss a national event. I've never missed a national event. I wouldn't ever think of missing a national event. So one of the first things you got to do, if you're not registered right now, if you're not going to Dallas, you better change that mindset. Because this company, because you are not serious enough, you have to be at that event. But it's really every event. You have to be at an event tomorrow. You have to be at the weekly meeting. You have to be plugged in. And I'm probably preaching to the choir, because you're here, you know, on a Friday night, giving up time with your family and so forth, and, you know. But I'm telling you, that's how I look at it. I expect leaders to be at those events. And this one, if you miss it, you'll never make it up. There's been some events you could probably catch up. It takes you 6 months to sometimes catch up on them, because there's so much information delivered. But the philosophy that's going to be shared at this one, the foundation blocks that why did we change the brand and how did we come about to that, will not be able to be delivered to a Super Saturday event or something. And so, and I assure you, as a leader, I'm not going to sit down with someone for 2 days and talk to them about what I learned. You know, they're just going to be out that information, and thus they will never have that critical stuff that they need to build their business. So it could cost, not going to Dallas could cost you your business. It could cost you millions of dollars in your business. I mean, it is a major decision. So I would do whatever it takes. And, you know, we're not talking, you know, it's free. There's three hurdles to go: transportation, hotel, registration. Well, they took down the one hurdle. You got it out of the way, because if you go do something, you know, 3 and 1 or 5, you get a free pass. That's pretty nice. That's a great, you know, that they never did that, you know, in prepaid. So that shows their value of this event. The other two, co-op, you know, get with people. If you don't have $1,000, And I'm not saying it'll cost $1,000. I think you can go to Dallas and back for $250, you know. And that's one membership for some of you, and it's two or three memberships for some of you. And it's that close. It's not a big thing. But let's just say it was $1,000 to get there. Here's what I'd really think. If you don't have an extra $1,000 sitting in a bank account, then you have to be in Dallas, because whatever you're doing sucks. I mean, you don't have $1,000. I mean, I probably have $1,000 in my wallet. My kids, every one of my children have at least $1,000. And my youngest child is 7. You know, my older sons have $20,000-$30,000 in their bank accounts. So that's the stuff you learn at those events. So if you don't have $500, I would be saying I have to go to that event because I don't have $500. So, and we'll work with you. There's lots of ways to get there, but I would, at least you don't have to walk. At least you don't have to push a hand cart. Because normally I'm not a real serious person. I mean, I have 10 kids, and so usually I just tell jokes, but that's what I thought this was going to be. But so let me think of a good joke here real quick to close out with in Utah. okay. There's these two boys, they're out in the woods, and they're playing around, and they find this hole, this abandoned well, and they throw a rock down the well, and they listen, and they listen, and they don't hear anything, and they say, wow, that's got to be a deep well. And then they find a big rock, and they drop it down the well, and they listen, and they listen, and they say, they didn't hear anything. They say, that's got to be a deep well. Then in the woods, they find a railroad tie, and they drag, takes both of them, they're about 10 years old, they drag it over to the well, they stand it up on its end and drop it down the well. They listen, and they listen, and just then a white goat came flying over the trees, 20 feet high in the air, over the trees, and went right down into the well. And those boys are like, oh my God. And then a man walks up and says, boys, have you seen my white goat? Mister, you would not believe what we just saw. A white goat came flying over those trees 20 feet high in the air, went right down into this hole. And the man says, boys, don't be playing with me. I tied him up to a railroad tie. that's not my best joke, but anyway, I got another one. I can go for several hours on jokes, but anyway. You want one more?
One more.
Okay. Any favorite topics?
Politics.
Feel free.
prepaid legal jokes. Lawyer jokes. Let's see. Oh. I'm trying to clean them up here in Utah. No, I'm just kidding. that was in Phoenix. I told them my Tucson jokes. Well, let me see here. Beach family joke? Yeah. I shouldn't have asked for topics because I don't know any jokes in those topics. Let's see. I got a joke. This is not a joke app. This is a list of jokes. I'm never in front of a crowd and can't remember a joke. Let's see. All right. That's a long one. I got to pick a good one, though, if I only have one left. My favorite blonde joke. Okay. Let me see if there's another one, though. Oh, I could go hours. Okay. No, we don't have time. That's a good one, too. Okay. My favorite blonde joke is I'll tell a cop blonde cop joke. I told you this the other night, right? I know, no, you're a cop. You were a cop, so. So this blonde cop pulls over a blonde. And the blonde cop goes up and says, I need to see your driver's license. And the blonde says, what's that? She says it's the thing in your purse with your picture on it. So the blonde goes, oh. And so she digs down in her purse and finds her makeup mirror. And she flips it open and smiles at herself and hands it to the blonde cop. And the blonde cop looks at the mirror and says, honey, why didn't you tell me you were a cop? Okay, here's my favorite blonde joke. I love blondes, but I love blonde jokes more. This blonde gets a new sports car, and she's so excited, and she pulls out of the driveway and runs out of the road and cuts right in front of a semi, almost runs him off the road. And the semi honks and pulls her over. He says, pull over. And so she pulls over, she gets out of her car. She goes, I'm sorry, I didn't even see you there. And he's like, lady, you almost killed us. He goes, come here. And so he takes her to the side of the road and draws a circle on the side of the road and says, stand in that circle and don't you move. So she stands in there. He goes over to her car and pulls out a pocket knife and slashes all four of her tires, cuts the leather seats. I mean, just starts thrashing the car and looks over at her, and she's laughing. So that makes him even madder. He goes to his truck, gets a baseball bat, smashes the windshield, smashes the headlights, just crushes it up, and looks at her. She's laughing even harder now. So he gets a can of gas out of his truck, pours gas all over her brand new sports car. He's just about ready to light it, and now she's laughing so hard she can't even stand up. And he can't get it. He goes over and says, lady, what are you laughing about? She said, every time you turned around, I stepped out of the circle.